It's Tuesday, which means this is College Football 134, the Covers Podcast, diving into every inch of college football. He is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer, and we have a full weekend of football to react to before we preview week four. Andrew, it was an odd week three slate. Little in the way of massive games, but it certainly delivered some entertainment, didn't it?
There was a lot, whether it was Kentucky almost pulling off that upset of Georgia. The backyard brawl didn't disappoint. I know that makes you a little angry. Pittsburgh came back from a 10-point deficit in the final minutes. You okay with that?
It's the first FBS team to come back from a 10-point deficit in the final 4 minutes of the season. It's the first time Pitt has done such, and I believe I read 50-plus years. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just move forward. My therapist tells me to stay calm in situations like this and progress forward in life.
Good advice. Good advice. That was really tough, too. I feel like West Virginia has outplayed Pitt in, like, three of the past four backyard brawls, and they only have like one win to show for it. It's a rivalry not going their way at this moment.
No, but that's also one of those moments. It was one of those ones for me, at least, where I remember gambling 101. The reason we preach such responsible gambling, it is a game played with an oblong ball. Like, that game was decided so many times. UNLV Kansas on Friday night, decided by an oblong ball just bouncing in dumb ways. And that's why it's always important to manage your bankroll. Only bet what you can afford to lose. And, again, don't get so angry over a single bet. That's gambling 101, is stay calm in these moments.
You're not getting angry over the lost money, that's for sure. You're just getting angry at your, like, overall existence, right? Is that what it is?
You know, it's really nice when you build me up on days like today. Before we continue into tearing down Douglas, before we continue into Andrew finally has a little bit of bragging rights. Let's rattle off the key podcast verbs. Please, everyone, subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it. Verbs, and more verbs. Our Saturday live show last week was our biggest yet, and that is because you, our listeners, are building us up. Thank you very much. And that Saturday, I don't know that we spent much time on what was almost an absolute shocker late Saturday night. I have admittedly been out of pocket most of the last 3 days, but even I caught the end of the drama in Lexington as Georgia held off Kentucky 13-12. Kentucky led 6-3 at half, 9-6 in the third quarter. The only touchdown in the game was the difference. And look, here's where I'm at on this one, Andrew. Kentucky has a good defense, but it's not that good. Georgia needs to have more than 262 total yards against Kentucky. Georgia needs to have more than 4.9 yards per play against Kentucky. Am I worried about this? I mean, Georgia won the turnover battle plus one and still struggled against Kentucky. 9 penalties for 85 yards didn't do the Bulldogs any favors, but they're at Alabama in 2 weeks after an idle week this week. And I'm that game has more intrigue for me than it did before Saturday.
That is for sure. I wrote the preview for this game last week, and I had the under in the first half, thinking that Stoops would have a good game plan to kind of slow down this Georgia offense in the first half. Then I assumed like Georgia would go in at half and kind of make their adjustments, kind of like they did against Clemson, and kind of run away with it in the second half, which wasn't the case. My big takeaways from the game were that Georgia's offensive line needed to be better than what we've said. This was supposed to be arguably definitely a top five offensive line in the country. You can make a case for top in the country for sure. Beck was facing much more pressure than I expected. And I think he's really missing Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey. Like when things were getting tough for him last year, those are two terrific security blankets to have. On top of that, Trevor Etienne didn't really get going until about the fourth quarter. I think he had 31 yards until the fourth quarter. And that's just not something I was expecting with the talent on that Georgia offensive line. I thought they were going to be able to push them around a little bit more. Long term, I'm not too concerned about them, especially if they stay healthy. They don't have as much depth. Like Kirby Smart has said this in the past. They don't have as much depth. They've got young guys backing up their elite talent. That's probably a runoff of the new age of college football in the transfer portal. Guys who would usually be on the bench for Georgia are starting somewhere else now. So depth is obviously a concern, but I don't know. I think if they stay healthy, still arguably the top team in the country. That game against Alabama does have more intrigue, but I'm not too concerned at this point.
I am excited to watch that game. Of course, we were excited to watch that game since it was put on the schedule back in the winter, but I'm excited to watch that game right now because of the chess match that we're going to get. As I knew Alabama would be good. I don't know if folks expected Alabama to look as good as it has in the first few games under Kalen DeBoer. The chess match, I was having a conversation with my father Thursday night, and I think football is our sport most akin to chess. There's that many moving pieces in each play. Sometimes you make decisions in the first quarter to influence plays in the third. The chess match in that game between Kirby Smart and Kalen DeBoer is something that I am looking forward to. But that's 2 weeks away.
Sorry. Yeah, I was like, I want to talk about Ryan Williams already. Like,
recapping last week. And again, another national title contender who did we get questions answered? Oregon took it to Oregon State 49-14. But you and I kind of expected a lopsided result. I think we pretty much scoffed at anyone who took Oregon State as low as +17. The game closed at +19, and I still never considered taking Oregon State. My framing of it last week was always based on their dismal offensive showing at San Diego State 2 weeks ago and getting pasted by 35 points in a rivalry game at home with no turnovers working against you. Mostly that furthers my doubt of Oregon State more than it burgeons new Oregon belief. I will admit, Oregon, I believe the Ducks made a change at center during the tight game against Boise State, and now rushing for 240 yards on 32 carries suggests that uncorked something. Not to mention Dylan Gabriel certainly had time, and I know you have a nice seat on the Dylan Gabriel bandwagon.
Yeah, for sure. I have him over 3,250 yards and a half yards or something like that for the season. He's on a good pace for that right now. Like you said, we are in agreement here. We weren't going to take anything away from this if Oregon crushed Oregon State, because we kind of thought it was going to happen. And there's not a whole lot of long-term value you can get in Oregon really at this point. There's still +240 to win the Big Ten. That's only behind Ohio State at this time. -400 to make the playoff. Like, it's tough. If you want to look at anything right now, maybe it's Gabriel. This might be the time to jump on the Gabriel Heisman train. He opened the season at +650, +700, and now I'm seeing him in the +900 to 1,000 range, which is obviously you're getting better value than you were at the beginning of the season, and he's pretty much doing what was expected at this point, and I don't expect that to change moving forward.
I hear you on the value thought, but I want to offer a word of caution, and it's my word of caution on Oregon in general. Yeah, they put up 49 in Oregon State. But Oregon State's defense ranks number 64 in SP Plus, number 76 in expected points added against in Parker Fleming's numbers. Oregon's about to face a lot of very good defenses. Aside from a trip to Purdue in mid-October, every defense Oregon faces the rest of the way is far better than Oregon State's. Oregon's going to face the number one defense in Ohio State, the number four in Michigan, two more top 20 defenses, six total in the top 30. The Oregon offense, in my opinion, while it looked good against Oregon State, that's looking good against a bottom half defense when the rest of Oregon's schedule is elite defenses. I'm a little worried in that regard. If I don't know about Oregon yet, I will know long before December if Oregon is for real. I'll know within a week of the start of November.
Yeah, that's fair for sure.
And now we need to get to podcast business, and not the usual podcast business that people talk about. We're not talking about money. We're talking about HR items, because we live in charmed times. Texas A&M beat Florida 33-20. And look, it's true. Florida is struggling, and we here at College Football 134 are blessed to have producer Jameson around. And he has offered a prepared statement. If you'll excuse me, on behalf of producer Jameson, you are my witness. This is a prepared statement from him. I am not
it
making
is.
This up.
It is.
It's one thing to lose at home. It's another thing to lose listlessly and without passion. This version of the Gators only seem to back down, ignoring they. Boy, this prepared statement wasn't very prepared. Ignoring they played in the swamp. Anyway, this team makes me sad. Please excuse me while I go play CFB 25, where maybe Florida can win some games. You can hope, but to my knowledge, if you are the guy on the sticks with Florida on CFB 25, producer Jameson, they're going to look a lot like they look with Billy Napier as their head coach.
Ooh, I don't like it. We've talked about this. Like, I love that shade, first of all. but That Florida, that him going back, Napier going back and forth between quarterbacks was just like, I just don't know what you're doing. And like, how can you build any momentum? How can you build, put any confidence in these players that, like, you and I have talked about this, like, they are our number one quit team. Like,
yes.
And I'm hearing things that are like, hey, this defense does not want to play for this team right now. Like, it's a matter of when, not if, with Billy Napier at this point. I guess we're not really sure, like, what value will the AD find in keeping him for the rest of the season as opposed to letting him go right away. Like, maybe you can, like, the guy you're going to hire isn't going to be here for several months anyway. So
it's
a really, really ugly spot. And I don't want to jump ahead to this week too much because I didn't even really think about this too much, but Florida is a 5.5-point favorite against Mississippi State. And I don't know why they're like, I obviously know why they're favorite because Mississippi State just got crushed by Toledo this week, but I think it's just setting us up nicely to fade Florida here.
This is when I say we live in charmed times, while I'm giving producer Jameson the shade, I also mean you and I discussed, I believe I discussed it 2 weeks ago. I discussed it last Tuesday, and then I mentioned it Saturday morning. We here at College Football 134 don't have the greatest video editing equipment. I am an amateur, but when I can put together three separate clips into 1 minute of saying, hey, folks, if Florida goes down against Texas A&M, bet Texas A&M live. And then I got A&M at -9.5, -10.5, both of those cashed. I'm saying right now, I'm definitely going to look for the live bet against Florida. In two weeks against Central Florida on October 5th. I might consider it if the Cowbells take an early lead this. If the Cowbells go up somehow 10-0 against Florida. Now Florida, yeah, 5.5, 6-point favorite. If the Cowbells go up 10-0, 10-3, I might be, because especially at that point, the way the live algorithms work, we will get still a juicy Florida number, a juicy Mississippi State number. It'll still be almost like an even money line if they're up by a touchdown. And we have no faith in Florida to show vigor, to show verve, to show any version of care.
Yeah, I think Mississippi State will be pissed off about their performance last week, whereas I don't think Florida cares. It's just, it's crazy times.
Anyway, I think producer Jameson has now left the room, and he will hopefully return to edit this and post it to the world. We will continue to proceed as if he will. And by proceed, I mean dive into week four. Week four has some more blue blood games, some banner type games. And we need to start with USC, a 6-point favorite at Michigan, 3:30 Eastern time on CBS. And it's going to be a fun one, partially because we know how good USC has looked. We know how bad Michigan has looked. This line, I believe our coworker John Mettler threw this out there. Let me see if I can get this up. This line has moved some 17.5 points from the summer. John is saying he's not betting this till you and I chime in. I think he was in our show doc beforehand. You know exactly where I'm going to go as I lampoon Michigan once again. It is the fact that it cannot whatsoever put together regular offensive drives. If I am looking correctly here, let's see. They have turned just more than a third of their drives into quality possessions, into scoring opportunities. That's not viable for a quality team. And now we can't quite gauge USC's defense yet. It's played LSU and Utah State. Most advanced metrics are still leaning heavily on 2023 data, as they should. But SB Plus, not that sold on USC yet. CollegeFootballInsiders.com has the CFP graphs numbers, which are only 2024 data. USC is number 10 in defensive EPA against. If you're looking at this defense just as this season, you've got to give it a little bit of credit, just a little bit, because again, we're only two games in. But if I'm already this doubting Michigan, its offense turning only a third of its possessions into quality moments, I'm certainly not betting Michigan, and I'm not betting it over.
I'll just put it on the board right now. Like, you haven't even mentioned the biggest story going into this game is that Michigan and Sharon Moore is switching quarterbacks to Alex Orji in this matchup. Now, the offense this offseason was based around Orji winning the job, but apparently he looked so terrible in camp that they had to go somewhere else. And that was Davis Warren, and he has looked just atrocious in his time on the field so far. And honestly, he's looked rattled in that game against Texas. I don't think you can put him in against this USC defense with that same mentality. So the switch is made at quarterback, and I ran and I bet under 46.5. Like, that's best bet. That's one of my best bets of the week. We're going under 46.5 USC, Michigan. Like, I just don't get it. Like, it's one of the most inefficient offenses in the country that's now going to be based almost solely on running the football. We've talked about Danton Lynn. The job he's done at USC already has been really impressive. They were able to shut down that LSU run game, which obviously LSU's run game has not looked so good so far, but they still shut it down behind what was one of the better offensive lines in the country. Like I said, running the ball a lot, they were only able to put up 12 points against USC. I don't hate the spread here, but I don't know. I think it's under. The defense is still okay enough. Like, the Michigan defense is okay enough that, like, they are able to hold Texas to 31 points. Obviously, Texas didn't really care in the fourth quarter for the most part, but you get up a few scores on Michigan and you know you're going to be able to just cruise. Like, that's the thing. Like, you get up a couple,
you get up 10 points on Michigan, over. You know.
It's over, and you can just cruise the rest of the way. So under 46.5, that line has not adjusted. Like, we talked about John and all the spread movement. The total did not adjust for this quarterback change, and I think that's a huge mistake. So under 46.5 for me.
And there's one other piece that will go hand-in-hand with your under here. We need to keep an eye on Michigan tight end Colston Loveland. He had an upper body injury. I believe Sherron Moore said he's questionable. I know I'm talking about a tight end who most people have never heard of. But he's the only returning starter. He's the only returning starter from the 2023 offense. He aids the running game and blocking, the passing game and being a safety blanket. If he ends up out and this line hasn't moved, because I don't expect the line to really move on a tight end, that to me will create value in USC at neg six. USC neg six, I could see USC winning this game 20-17, because that's all, like, 20. Michigan's not scoring 20 points. But if Colston Loveland's out, I don't know if Michigan's going to have any offensive success.
This is another spot where a Michigan team total under could be worth a live look as well.
I think we're going to see that a lot this season.
Like, watch how Michigan looks on that first drive, and I'll be hammering a team total under almost right away.
Another team that we like to talk about the team totals is playing a huge game. Utah at Oklahoma State, 4 o'clock Eastern
Utah
on
Fox. Pod.
This is a Utah pod. Here's where Andrew usually cuts me off to yell three words: Utah Natty Champs. We are a Utah pod, but this game we were hesitant about because the Magic 8-ball known as Kyle Whittingham cannot be trusted ever with health updates. Good news is, the very good news is, Utah receiver, former USC receiver, Dorian Singer can probably be trusted more. He said Cam Rising is playing. Rising was available to the media. Almost, I don't know of any college football program who makes a player available to the media if there's any wonder about their availability in the game. I have not looked for a Whittingham quote. I would not believe the Magic 8-ball. But then if you need one more piece of incentive to believe that Cam Rising is playing, that our Utah futures have life, it is that Circus Sports opened at Oklahoma State neck two on Sunday. This game is now Utah by 2.5. I will say that right now, I got a plus 120 money line on Utah late on Sunday night, mostly out of principle, mostly out of just, you know what, I don't need to look at this game. If Cam Rising plays, this is going to have value. And that was the entire thought process.
Yep, that was a great process to have in this one. I jumped on the money line early as well. I think it's a fair move. Like, I think that move is fair with this expectation that he plays. Like, I think Rising is worth about a touchdown in this matchup for Utah, particularly that they're in Stillwater. I don't know. I still think, like, Utah Natty Champs. I'm just going to get behind that. I don't know if the Big 12 is ready for Utah. And even though they're not in Utah this week, they're in Stillwater. I just, like, Alan Bowman is Oklahoma State's quarterback. Like, we know who he is at this point in his career. Like, he's a fine journeyman college quarterback. But I'm a little concerned about this Oklahoma State offensive line right now too. Like, Ollie Gordon has not looked like Ollie Gordon to this point. He's averaging just 3.5 yards per carry. Oklahoma State probably should have lost to Arkansas in that game. They were down 21-7, and Arkansas had some really interesting play calling. We'll say it's interesting, and some interesting decisions were made in the second half of that game. I think it's very like Oklahoma State was lucky to come away with a win in that game. But my expectation is that Utah is like, even though Ollie Gordon has kind of underwhelmed to this point, they're still going to stop. They're going to be like, they're going to focus on stopping Gordon and being like, here, Alan Bowman, try to beat us if you can. And then they'll be able to pressure him without having to send too many blitzes as well, I think. So I like Utah at less than a field goal here as well. If you could like, and I expect it'll move. I assume we'll hit three when we come back, please come back, watch us live on Saturday morning as we break down more of the week. But I expect this line will be at three when we're talking on Saturday morning.
You know what, Andrew, you've talked me into it. We're not even going to have a banner for it. I am now making an official play of Utah by a point and a half, -110, available at FanDuel as we record this Tuesday afternoon. You talked me into it mostly by saying this line is going to move. You telling me this is going to probably get to three. If I can get that 1.5, -110 at FanDuel, there is value in that ticket. Add that to my ledger for the week. Not even going to have a banner up for it because I quite literally just made that decision. And our final game of the week that we want to touch on, another high-profile, big-name, blue bloods matchup, Tennessee at Oklahoma. Tennessee is now a 7-point favorite. A week ago, it was -3. I don't mention that to say, hey, why didn't you bet it a week ago? I intended as context of this past weekend's impact. Oklahoma kind of struggled against Tulane, to our expectation. Tennessee wiped the floor with Kent State, very much to our expectation. Did this line move too much going from 3 up to 7?
That's a really good question because I don't know if I have the answer right now. Like Oklahoma played one of the worst teams in the country in Temple. We've talked about how much we're going to enjoy fading Houston this year. They beat them by 4 points by a score of 16-12. And like they needed a late field goal to cover against Tulane. Like we figured that was going to happen as well. I don't know what you can take away from Tennessee's first three games, but I think outscoring your opponents 191-13 it has to say something. Like, yeah,
I've got to carry the numbers.
Yeah, it's a lot to a little. I'm sure Venables is going to try to cook something up to slow down Nico here, but I'm not going to be betting on it because the line move gives me a little bit to ponder, but I would lean towards Tennessee here. I think
I would lean toward Tennessee as well. I am also not betting it because a touchdown. Like I've doubted Oklahoma's offensive line all along. I've said that before. It's why I didn't get too upset when I lost money betting the Sooners as 4 touchdown favorites against Houston. One, that was my own fault. Two, it confirmed a preseason prior for me to act on moving forward. Should I act on it? You know, if we get a 6.5 or a 6, there's no chance I hold back. 7, I'm going to hold back just for now. We have that 6.5 or 6 live on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern before week 4 kicks off. Andrew, you know, you've picked up this over the years. I hate giving up early in the morning, but if thousands of people are going to keep doing it with me, I will watch the sunrise while I finish show prep for them. I'll do it for them.
Thank you, Douglas, for waking up, and thank all of you guys so much. We're only eight episodes
in
the season.
4 weeks in, count week zero.
Count week zero, eight episodes, 4 live episodes, and your guys' support has been incredible. Really love it. Love all the action in the chats. Please keep it up. Please hit that like and subscribe, and we're going to keep having fun and hopefully giving out some winners as well.
We give out those bets on Saturday morning. We give out some today because close listeners will notice we have not suggested bets on all of those games of the week. Well, we did on 2 of the 3 today. The biggest games do not necessarily provide the biggest value, and gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. I had a week of what-ifs, Texas State, West Virginia, Utah found an offense without Cam Rising, Coastal Carolina, whatever. That's how it goes. I went 3.5, 3.5, 3.5, lost 2.43 units. Now I'm 12-15 here on the year, down 4.2. But, you know, if I keep going 2 weeks strong, 1 week weak, I'll end up with a nice season.
Yeah, that's nothing to be upset about.
Go ahead, brag.
Yeah. I went 4-2 last. I don't even want to brag because the first few weeks have been so rough, but we did have a winning week, 4-2 for +1.65 units. the winners were Vandy had a big drive at the end, but like Vandy drive at the end to go over their team total, but then they give up the lead super late, and we have now have to sweat out that Ball State game in a few weeks. I thought we had that in the bag. So yeah, we needed that other win for Vandy over their team season team total. The Zona Kansas State, we now have a Friday night curse. That total, we jumped on it at 58. It closed at 61.5. Arizona State had a very, or sorry, not Arizona, Arizona had a very impressive opening drive and then did not do anything else unless your name was McMillan on your nameplate there on your jersey. But yeah, tough one there. Manhattan apparently is still a tough place to play football for visitors. But yeah, it's a solid week overall. The player props went well, was really happy with that. And yeah, we're going to just, we trusted the process and the process is going to move forward and
You trusted the process. Why don't you keep us going here this week? Get it. If you had that good week, keep it moving right now.
Yeah, so I said Friday night curse, but I'm going right back to a Friday night game, of course. I've got Washington State minus 11.5 this week. They're playing San Jose State. I just don't get this line. I guess the thinking here is that Washington State just – had an upset victory as 6-point dogs in the Apple Cup. And this is a very typical letdown spot, but I don't know. San Jose State has played one of the softest schedules in college football. They play, they open their season against FCS Sacramento State. Then they took on a very much regressing Air Force team that can't run or throw, which is obviously terrible. And then they played our favorite team that we like to mention this year so far in college football 134, and that is Kennesaw State. So it's been really soft. I think John Mateer is a problem for anyone. I think he's going to be a real problem for San Jose State. He already has over 700 yards passing and 300 yards rushing, 11 total touchdowns. This is also a Cougs team that is like dedicated to running the football now. They're running it almost 60% of the time. So with these, like, it's not a huge spread, but it's big enough that, like, maybe you worry if they're up by only, like, I don't know, 14. But the offense will remain the same, and they'll keep moving that football all game long. Really like this. I would take this up to 13.5. Like, this 11.5 is a weird number for me. I think you're safe to take it up to almost 2 touchdowns. Really, really like the Cougs here on Friday night.
So what you have now told everybody is live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern on the covers and YouTube and Twitter channels.
Will be
Andrew, Andrew will be in a good mood or a bad mood. He will not be anywhere near neutral. I am avoiding Friday night, partly for that reason this week. I am jumping off with a first half bet. I am going to go ahead and take Indiana by 15.5 in the first half against Charlotte. I got Indiana at 26.5 for the game on Sunday night, covers.com/pick/NCAAF. If you want to see those on Sundays and see what my earliest thoughts were of the week, that is always a reason. There's value. Now that line's north of 28, so I'm being a coward taking a 15.5 in the first half. Look at this UCLA game last week. Indiana scored in the first half. Touchdown, touchdown. Turnover on downs on an aggressive 4th and 6 at the plus 33. I love that. Well done, yes. Cignetti. Touchdown. Halftime. So 3 out of 4 first half possessions, touchdowns. The fourth, go in for the touchdown. Looking at Charlotte, needed a comeback against Gardner-Webb. Like, I don't know. I know it's only year two for Biff Pogge, but don't really like anything about what we're seeing from this program. I'm going to take Indiana early. I'm going to take Indiana often. I'm going to take Indiana to pack it in, even though there is no look-ahead moment yet. Not for a while for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, I don't – I think as kind of a – dark horse, can they be a contender? Obviously they're not expected to compete with the Ohio States and Oregon's of the Big Ten, but like they want to make it known that they're going to be tough to be, they're going to be a tough out in those tougher games, so they're not going to take the foot off the gas at all. And we were talking before the show that I like their team total over here as well. I'm high on the Hoosiers this year.
I agree with you on the team total. I'm agreeing with you on being high on the Hoosiers at this point, but I'm not agreeing with you that they might not take their foot off the gas. That's why I'm sticking with the first half line. I know Parker makes this game closer to 5 touchdowns. He's nodding his head in the background because he knows I looked at his numbers. But clearly I'm worried Indiana goes up 28-0, coasts, and wins 35-3. I'm worried they will close to 35-10. That's why I'm taking that first half number of 15.5. That's my first play, -118 at FanDuel. Why don't you keep us in the Midwest?
Yeah, let's go with my boys from Northern Illinois, the team you love right now. Huskies -13.5. They're playing Buffalo, which is not a very good MAC team at this point. Now, NIU has not played since their massive upset of Notre Dame, but I actually think that helps them in this situation. Usually you have the big upset and you maybe go on the road the next week, and then that's that kind of prime letdown spot. But they've had the bye this week, so maybe they had a few days to celebrate that huge moment, and then they get right back to business, which is stomping Buffalo, a team that's going through a lot of changes. First-year head coach for them. They only returned 3 starters on offense. I don't even want to give them any credit for their win against UMass because it's UMass. Like, I don't know. UMass is bad. I don't really.
Hashtag analysis. It's UMass.
UMass is bad. They got shut out against Mizzou in their opener. I'm not sure NIU is on Mizzou's defensive standard, but it's a very, very good defense for the Huskies. One of the reasons why they were my pick to win the MAC this year. I think they'll be able to shut down the Bulls almost all season. I can see this line getting over. It's 13.5. That's at FanDuel -118. It's mostly 14, so go get that 13.5 where you can. That said, I'd still take the 14, and I'd probably take it up to 16.5.
Bold ever taking any MAC team by 3 possessions, but you are generally a bold individual. I will support that. I will be taking a MAC team as a 4 or 5 possession underdog. I am going to back Miami of Ohio at +28.5 at Notre Dame. That's -110 at Bet Rivers. Look, this game opens on Sunday with Notre Dame at -27. Move to -28, and I think that's the wrong way. Notre Dame is down 2 starting offensive linemen and center Ashton Craig and right guard Billy Schrauf. Now, they are replaced by veterans with starting experience, Pat Coogan at center and Rocco Spindler at right guard. Pat Coogan has never started at center, so that's a new fulcrum next to Spindler. I think this line moved with those considered, of course. That's why it moved down toward 27 at the open and staying at 28 now. Could be argued it should be in the 30s. But 2 starting offensive linemen should not be diminished. Furthermore, some of Notre Dame's 66 points against Purdue were nonsense. A 70-yard touchdown run when trying to run out the clock before halftime. A touchdown from your third-string quarterback. Notre Dame is getting too much credit for that game. That happens sometimes with particular blowouts. You need to look at that and realize the numbers might say this game should be north of 30. Actually getting the 28.5 is value. One last point, maybe 2 last points. Truck Martin and Marcus Freeman have never coached together that I can find, but they certainly know each other. And I think any coach who knows Truck Martin has respect for Truck Martin. Marcus Freeman is not going to run up the score, especially given Marcus Freeman in his head coaching career at Notre Dame is 12-5 against the spread anywhere but Notre Dame Stadium. He is 7-6 against the spread at Notre Dame Stadium. 5 possessions is just too many.
Yeah, that's a tough spot for them there, but I like that play. Miami of Ohio, they're going to be testy after that rivalry loss to Cincinnati, and we don't have to talk about that either. Those long field goals by Cincinnati, that just bothered me as well.
Now, I just removed one of my picks from the board because its line has moved. So you're going to give us one last pick for the day, and then we're going to bring on Parker Fleming to have some fun.
Ooh, exciting. Okay, my last one really quickly here. I'm going Georgia Tech +10.5. They're at Louisville, and this is straight up a fade of Louisville. I have no belief in this team right now. They've had to replace so many key places. We know who Tyler Shough is. Like, he's another one of these journeyman quarterback who's fine, but he's not a game changer in any way. We know Georgia Tech can play with anyone in the ACC except for maybe Miami at this point, even though they took it to Miami last time they played Miami too. But obviously that was sans Cam Ward. But they've been playing close football games at this point. I don't see them getting blown out here in any way. I don't see Louisville being able to really shut down this Georgia Tech offense. So, yeah, we're giving Louisville too much credit for beating up on with Jacksonville State and Austin Peay. Was that the FCS game they played? It's like,
yes.
I don't get it at all. I don't get it at all at this point.
So, I have said all season, I have said all summer that I thought Louisville is kind of getting far too much credit for its start last season. I think its start last season was fraudulent, even if it did reach, 10-0. I maintain that. So yeah, anyone who wants to fade Louisville right now, I support that life decision. I'm on board with you there, Andrew. Let's.
Appreciate you.
Hey, every so often I need to give you support so that you don't get too used to me always disagreeing with you. It's just, what's that compliment sandwich? It's an insult sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go ahead and bring on Parker Fleming, our good friend at Stats of War on Twitter. I don't know if he's looking to talk Colorado or Nebraska. I just know he's going to bring something involving chaos.
I mean, I was going to come in here talking about the Montana Grizzlies, but I think we can talk a little bit about some FBS games and where
careful.
We want to go.
How are y'all doing talking today? About St. Francis of Pennsylvania. I assure you, it is in my notes today. They're playing Eastern Michigan this week, and everyone knows how I feel about the Emus.
I mean, there's a lot of opportunity across the board, right? Yeah, I like a couple games this week. I mean, I'm interested in Colorado against Baylor. You were just talking as I was listening in the background about fading Louisville. And this is just kind of a trust situation. I think Colorado got a little bit of live reps against some bad competition against Colorado State last week. And Baylor, I'm just still not believing it, especially in this spot on the road here. So I don't know what you guys have on this, but I think I'm back in Colorado here all the way as the favorite here. You've got this at I think it's out to 1.5 now certain places. I've got this closer to a toss up just on the merits, but I think there's some overreaction. I look at specifically Baylor's offense, 88th in EPA per dropback. We knew with Daquan Finn that offense was going to look different with the selection issues. And then even Baylor's defense, which has been kind of okay, 42nd in EPA per dropback, but 132nd in rush rate over expected. Teams are just running the ball against Baylor a ton. They're going to see way more high volume. I don't know that Baylor has the dudes to match up on Colorado. I think that Colorado could hit a couple big plays and put this out of reach of Baylor's offense here. Note that Baylor's defensive success rate is much better than their defensive EPA per play. When we see that split, what do we think? Explosives. And what is Colorado's offense good at? Explosives. So not necessarily a ringing endorsement of Colorado as a team, but I think in this spot, Baylor has really not been tested in the air like they're going to be against this game. I think I'm going to go with Colorado and a little positive momentum after the win last week.
Yeah, Daquan Finn has made that offense look stuck in the mud at this point. I don't know if that's just play calling at this point, but it has not been what we've I'm sure what Baylor was expecting when they got him in from Toledo there. So yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that they hired an air raid offensive coordinator and did not have an air raid and got rid of their air raid quarterback for Daquan Finn.
That's an interesting move.
Maybe Parker says maybe, as if we haven't all had the thought that hey, I'm gonna go make pasta tonight. Oh no, all I have is soup. You can't do it.
I mean, a dream is a wish your heart makes, is I think what I would say there. And sometimes when you're managing a program, you're just trying to get people that you trust in there, and fit comes second. And so that's, yeah, so I like that one a lot. The other one I'm on is I like a little Nebraska here. I don't know if you guys talked that one earlier today. But Nebraska, I think, is playing that same kind of consistent no explosives, low success defense. They're fifth in EPA per rush, 28th in EPA per dropback. I think they're absolutely going to stifle Illinois' offense there. And then on offense, they are just have almost completely removed that negative tail from what we saw last year. I really feel like we're seeing the vision for Nebraska come together in terms of not having those disaster plays on offense, just being competent there, and then playing that same brand of Matt Rule defense where they're not giving up those big plays. They're 16th in EPA per rush on offense, 31st in EPA per dropback, great in game control. They have 77% echo ratio, meaning that 77% of quality possessions in their game so far have come from their side. And to really put things in perspective on the defensive side, Illinois, 51st in early downs EPA. Nebraska's 13th. And so Illinois is going to be behind the chains. And I don't know if Luke Altmaier behind the chains is a recipe for an upset there. Even though it is a weeknight, I'm buying in Nebraska here. And I think this is another spot. They will fend off an annoying Illinois team, but I have this as a pretty clear Nebraska win.
I don't like betting weeknights anymore because our luck has been terrible. But looking at these numbers, I am intrigued by an Illinois team total under. I don't know where their offense is going to find sustained success. Nebraska's defense is not yet recognized nationally for how stinking good it is.
they had
and
trouble.
There's 8.5 out there, right? For I see an eight and a half. Like, I think as long as this is south of 9, 9.5, because again, we've talked about on this show, I don't like the 9.5. So I don't want that. I think you got to go Nebraska there.
Yeah.
Taco, you got Andrew, you got anything on Illinois, Nebraska before we get out of here and let him breathe freely in the gorgeous airs of the West?
I was just going to say Illinois had some issues punching the ball into the end zone against Central Michigan. So I think it's going to be a little tougher against Nebraska in this one.
Just to go to Parker's numbers one more time. Yeah. We hear me rail against Michigan for its inability to turn good possessions into points. Illinois, points per echo, otherwise known as points per quality drive, 2.7. That is bottom third of the country. That is a problem that Nebraska will make worse.
Absolutely. Third one I've got, just to sprinkle in one more in here. I have TCU on the road by 4.5. I think that the problems they saw against UCF, bad clock management the second half, is totally fixable. But also, I don't think SMU's run game is anywhere near what they're going to see out of UCF, and kind of that cumulative beatdown. The offensive line play we saw from UCF was really, really great. That's been a weakness for SMU. SMU's playing Jennings because he can move a little bit. I think they prefer to have Stone, but this offensive line is not letting them thrive at all. SMU 86th in EPA per rush. So I don't think they have any kind of floor on offense be able to overcome a deficit. I think we can see TCU continue to look sharper on offense as Sonny Dykes has taken over and gotten a little more involved in the offense. I think I'll say that diplomatically there. And I think that Sonny Dykes knows that as things are uncertain and perhaps discontent in Fort Worth over there, beating SMU by a lot would go a long way. So I like the motivational spot there as well. So I'm going to take the Horned Frogs on the road.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm out on the ponies. I'm totally out of them. Like, I had a list of quarterbacks. I was like, this is a guy to. I thought Preston Stone was going to be the guy to watch, one of the guys to watch this year. He was on my list. It has not obviously been going well for them. The offensive line has looked really weird for Southern Methodist. Like, they can't seem to pass when Stone is in, but Jennings can. And but now they're going to have to get Jennings to throw the ball more. It's just. It's a weird situation there. So I'm avoiding Southern Mass, and I like TCU at less than a field goal for sure.
I like Parker's point of Sonny Dykes might have some ideas of the politics over in Dallas, and he might want to make life worse for Rhett Lashley. I can see that. I know it pains Parker to Andrew. It almost pains Parker as much as it pains you to doubt SMU.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
The thing about SMU that's frustrating this year is, like, they don't look bad in the ways that I thought they would struggle. Like, yeah, it looks very different than what I thought. It looks like, I mean, frankly, without saying this, like, disrespectfully, I think Rhett Lashley had a potential jump to a big job kind of teed up, and that timeline is definitely, if not fully resetting, is definitely taking a step back there.
It's the Jason Kendall.
What they've been able to do.
It's absolutely the Jason Candle. Jason Candle, you couldn't get out of Toledo, and now I don't know if you have an opportunity to get out of Toledo.
Yeah, you could even call that the Matt Campbell. I don't know. Hey, if you were going to take the job, you might have should have done it. But again, you know, situations are different, and not like any of those jobs are, you know, SMU or Iowa State on their face are bad situations. But it does seem interesting to see a guy that is presumably ascendant kind of stall out. And I wonder if that's not what we're seeing at Rhett Lashley. And maybe SMU is the job for him long term.
And there is an arguable hope there that SMU is going to need a few cycles to get a full Power Four roster. As much as they tried to portal one in this season, it clearly did not work. Give Rhett Lashley a few cycles. He's going to get, if they pull that development off, he'll get that much more credit of, wow, you built SMU into the top third of the ACC.
You know who might get a lot of credit there is Derek King, who is always prudent and is absolutely ascendant. And we'll see where credit and where blame lie overall. But yeah, those are my three for this week. There, hopefully they'll pan out. I went over on the BetUS show last week, just honest to God. I had four that just broke very closely. It was a terrible week. So I'm firing the board. We'll see if I can write things back this week.
You and I take opposite approaches off bad weeks. I am narrowing the board off my bad week. You're just going to shotgun it, and Andrew's going to sit there going, I had a really nice week last week. It was kind of nice last week. I enjoyed the football last week.
We'll take it because it's been really weird first few weeks of college football. A lot of weird bounces, a lot of bad beats. It's felt like I don't see many guys out there saying like, "Oh my God, I've been killing it so far in college football betting this year." It's been a bit of a grind, but we trust our process and we go forward.
Parker, we'll get you out of here. Your three were TCU 2.5, Colorado 2, and Nebraska 8.5. Try to get away from that 9.
Yes, sir. Best of luck this week. Always enjoy talking to you. Hopefully be back next week.
Talk to you soon, good friend. Andrew, hey, we should also recap our bets and get ourselves out of here. I led my day off live betting. Wild choice. College Football 134 is a Utah pod. You believe in Utah winning the national championship. I took Utah by 1.5 at Oklahoma State. I also had Indiana in the first half against Charlotte by 15.5. That's a little juice. Neg 118 at FanDuel. And my last play was Miami of Ohio plus 28.5 at Notre Dame, in part because Marcus Freeman has yet to figure out how to cover a spread at Notre Dame Stadium, going 7-6.
So weird.
In his 2+ seasons as head coach there.
So weird. Okay. And for me, I went USC Michigan under 46.5. Can't believe that number hasn't moved yet. I'm going with to break the Friday night curse. We're going Wazoo minus 11.5 against San Jose State, NIU minus 13.5 against Buffalo, and Georgia Tech plus 10.5 when they visit Louisville. We are fading the Cardinals at this point.
That does it for us today, but of course we will be live at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. Like and subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you are getting the Tuesday value long before that Saturday show. I can't sit here and tell you what line will have moved in our favor by Saturday, but I can sit here and tell you I am very confident at least one of our 7 plays will look like found money by Saturday morning. 1-6 because you're playing one Friday night. That's why you listen Tuesday. That is Andrew Cayley at Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D_Farmer, and we will see you early on Saturday morning.